This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But let's just be honest that these elections were not as bad as before. Because we know our history. The Zimbabweans, they are growing, they are maturing in politics. And we also have to expect that human beings, they don't always agree.
That was Elliot Masote, professor of business at Devry University in the U.S. state of Ohio, on the recent presidential election in Zimbabwe. Details coming up. Also, the Group of 20 summit starts tomorrow in New Delhi. And a suicide attack today on a military base in northern Mali kills 64 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Group of 20, or G20 summit, starts tomorrow as most of the world's leading economies gather in New Delhi. The sole African voice in the bloc belongs to South Africa, but other members, including the United States, are pushing for the inclusion of the African Union. Darren Taylor reports on some of the issues likely to be raised that are important to Africa.
Some G20 members, including India and South Africa, are pressing the bloc to help reform global financial institutions such as the World Bank, so borrowing terms are better suited to capacities of less developed nations. Several African nations are struggling under heavy debts as interest rates rise and the US dollar strengthens. Matteo Villa, senior research fellow at the Italian Institute for International Political Studies in Milan, says Italy already is pushing for this at the Paris Club of Western Creditors. But, says Villa, the club's attempts to find solutions to the debt crisis are undermined by what he calls the big elephant in the room.
It is bound to fail because there is another fracture that China actually holds most of the debt of heavily indebted countries. Two-thirds of the debt is Chinese, almost one-third is Paris Club, and then there is multilateral institutions.
China has consistently said it will not discuss debt relief at forums such as the G20 and will instead talk with individual debtors about possible repayment restructuring. Villa was among several policy analysts speaking Thursday on a webinar organized by the South African Institute of International Affairs. Several G20 members say they want rich countries to fulfill their 2009 pledges to transfer $100 billion a year to help developing countries cope with climate change. The United Nations says African nations contribute the least to the carbon emissions that cause climate change, but suffer the most from its effects, drought, storms, and floods. Fabio Suarez, Director of International Studies at the Institute of Applied Economic Research in Rio de Janeiro, says Brazil intends to focus on making sure efforts to slow climate change don't hamper development.
Of course, Brazil supports the whole climate action, but we are really concerned about development being forgotten in this process. So we need to make sure that not only the energy transition, but the ecological transition comes in a way that it doesn't jeopardize the right to develop that all countries have.
On a broader front, the director of the South African Institute of International Affairs, Elizabeth Sidiropoulos, says the G20 is deeply divided.
The lessons we have learned from the last 2 years of the Ukraine war, and something that I think has shocked Europe and North America, is the way in which the developing countries have positioned themselves, whether non-aligned or a little lukewarm, you know, voting in favor of a resolution but not implying sanctions. In Europe, a sense that Europe has lost the global south.
South Africa is the sole African voice in the G20, but that should change soon as members are expected to approve, including the African Union. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A suicide attack targeted a military base in northern Mali today, a day after suspected extremists carried out deadly strikes on an army camp and a passenger boat, which killed 64 people. The army said on social media that an airport section of a base in Gao had been hit in a complex attack. It gave no details, saying only that response and assessment are underway. An airport employee told the French news agency AFP that Friday's attack entailed two car bombs accompanied by gunfire and that the airport section of the base had been closed. A day earlier, two separate attacks targeted a ferry on the Niger River and an army position at Bamba, also in the Gao area. The provisional government says the two assaults left 49 civilians and 15 soldiers dead. 3 days of national mourning have been announced starting today. The region, the cradle of a Islamist insurgency that has swept into three Sahel nations, has seen a resurgence of tension in recent weeks, triggered in part by the pullout of United Nations peacekeeping troops from Mali. Uganda. Uganda has closed an export zone market at the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo over terror alerts. This comes just days after security agents detonated about six homemade bombs in different parts of the capital, Kampala. One was at a church, and security says the border market could be a target. In a televised address last night, President Yoweri Museveni said there is intelligence that those planting the bombs are working for the Allied Democratic Forces, rebels operating in DRC forests. He offered assurances that they will be apprehended, but cautioned Ugandans to be extra vigilant. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Every week on Tuesday and Friday, hundreds of traders from Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, and Uganda gather for trade at Mponwe Rubiriha border market in Uganda's Kasese district. However, this week the traders have been denied access to it by security personnel based on intelligence reports of an imminent attack by rebels of DRC-based Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF. Lieutenant Mate Magwara, a deputy resident district commissioner, says security has been heightened around the market to protect people and property from the attacks.
We had information that this place, the market, is not safe. Now, we couldn't take things for granted. We had to make sure the lives of Ugandans is secure. So we had to find a temporary measure.
Moses Mugisa is the town clerk of Mponwe Lubiriha. He says security has placed the market under surveillance and urges inconvenienced traders to cooperate with the security agents for their safety.
Apparently, business is at a standstill, but we are trying to work hand in hand with the security agencies to ensure that the place is well secured so that our traders can go ahead and do their business.
This comes as Uganda battles attempted terror attacks. Uganda police report that they have thwarted terror attempts in different parts of Kampala and detonated six improvised explosive devices. President Museveni blames the attempts on ADF rebels, who he says are being defeated in the forests of the DRC by joint Uganda and DRC military forces. He says the ADF is now resorting to desperate measures, like trying to enter Uganda, planting bombs, and killing citizens. He, however, warns the rebels will be hunted down.
Their bad luck is that the Congo government has allowed us to operate in Congo, and we have brought all our capabilities. So what we need to do is to make anybody who has got that idea of using these chemicals to kill people to lose appetite for doing that. You do it, we kill you. The planner will die or will be captured and prosecuted. So working with the Congo government, we are hunting these people.
He also asked the public to be vigilant.
As we are hunting these people in Congo, your job here is to see anybody you don't know and say, who are you? See anybody carrying a bag, you don't know him. But even if he's not carrying a bag, because he may be having a suicide belt, contact the police. Somebody you don't know in your area should not enter your church, your mosque, should not enter your bar. ADF, because we have been hunting them, Many of them had run away. They are not known in their areas.
In June, suspected ADF rebels attacked a school in Uganda's Kasese district and killed 43 people and injured several others. The government has reassured the public that the rebels will be defeated. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
With a re-election victory last month, Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has pleaded for unity in the politically divided country and faces the challenges of his promises to lift millions out of poverty. Elliot Masote, a professor of business at Devry University, who has closely been monitoring the election, tells me the call for unity could bear fruit, but the promise of lifting millions from poverty is not going to be easy.
Well, yeah, unity, you know, can be achieved if Zimbabweans really want that unity and see the benefits of uniting for the next 5 years and forever. So about lifting people from poverty, that's not going to be that much easy. Looking at what he has done in the past 5 years, after having promised millions of jobs, were they created those jobs? I don't think so. And now promising lifting millions of people out of poverty, how can he now do miracles in his final term of office? And what's different now from, you know, what he was doing in the past 5 years?
Mnangagwa's, you know, second term comes amid this economic challenge, with the Zim dollar having plunged 80% since the start of the year. So, and then there is no international funding. It has been frozen. So how will Zimbabwe's economy fare in the absence of foreign funding?
Yeah, that's another thing that, you know, really he is going to find it very difficult to achieve whatever he promises Zimbabweans, because without international funding, how are they going to do that? Of course, they are counting big time on, you know, diaspora remittances, people out of Zimbabweans, you know, sending money home, but that's not going to be enough. And also they are counting on their minerals, selling minerals out of, you know, internationally, but with the level of corruption that has been there before, I think that was the thing he was supposed to, you know, say, that I'm going to fight corruption going forward. But he never mentioned corruption as if it's not there. And now going in the next 5 years, it's just going to be more of the same of promises without really anything being done.
Professor, another elephant in the room is the main opposition, which has described the election results as a gigantic fraud. Nelson Chamisa of the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change has called for a new vote.
Yeah, it can be, and it's not new for the Zimbabwean opposition to claim elections have been rigged. Of course, there were some problems, and we're looking at African politics in general. You know, whoever have lost is just going to claim elections have been rigged, but there is rigging, and I'm not saying there's no rigging. And if we have evidence, if they have evidence, of course, they can go to the courts. But the problem I have with the opposition is that they always split the Zimbabwean opposition towards elections. And then they will claim to be strong enough to beat ZANU-PF, which to me doesn't make any sense, that there is no strength in splitting. Why can't they unite? There is always a strength in unity. So they don't want to look into themselves, blame themselves, that they are going to change themselves and be stronger for the next elections, because blaming ZANU-PF, this and that, I don't think it's something that is going to help them.
And lastly, Professor, the European Union Observer Mission has said the polls happened under a climate of fear in Zimbabwe. But one thing that was very surprising is the Southern African Regional Bloc, SADC, to the surprise of many, said the Zimbabwe election fell short of regional standards. It usually sided with the ruling party, but this was a very different take.
I was in Zimbabwe from May 22 to August 4th. I didn't see that type of fear compared to previous elections where people were really afraid to go out and say they are members of the opposition or putting on T-shirts of the opposition. This time, there wasn't that much fear. But let's just be honest that these elections were not as bad as before, because we know our history. The Zimbabweans, they are growing, they are maturing in politics, and we also have to expect that human beings, they don't always agree, especially after elections. But, you know, my assessment is that it was not as bad as people may want to exaggerate.
That was Elliot Masote, professor of business at Devry University. He talked with me from the U.S. state of Ohio. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Research by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies says the recent spate of coups in West Africa has been characterized by the influence of global authoritarian actors, particularly Russia. In Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, the coups were preceded by Russian disinformation campaigns that attacked the elected governments, the capability of democratic governments to maintain security, and stoking anti-colonial sentiment. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the center, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi what African countries should do to counter such Russian disinformation efforts.
Well, it is important to recognize that there is some external influence here in trying to stir up dissent towards democracy. And in addition to the countries like Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, you know, Russians have been involved in undermining democratic processes in some two dozen African countries through disinformation, through electoral interference, by undermining different actions on the part of the United Nations. And so the question really is, what does Africa want to do and what can Africa do to counter these external efforts to undermine its democracy? And there are many things that can be done. First, of course, is to raise awareness of the extent of the problem and to try to institute more reputational and economic cost when an external actor is engaged in undermining elections or promoting disinformation. You know, Africa has been a relatively permissive environment for disinformation, which is one of the reasons why disinformation has surged to the extent that it has on the continent. And so there's a real demand to strengthen the regulatory environment for external actors to manipulate information on the continent. There need to be stronger penalties when those are identified. You know, there are tools out there that can forensically identify the sources of disinformation. You know, those need to be strengthened, as do different fact-checking institutions on the continent. And when, you know, specific external actors are identified as being behind these actions, there need to be more penalties, both bilaterally and regionally, to try to reclaim an information environment for a free flow of information and debate within societies and on which democracy depends. And finally, I would say more needs to be done in helping to strengthen the capacity and space for private media outlets on the continent. When there are trusted, credible sources of information, these are platforms that citizens can turn to. And when they exist, then they are a very potent means of mitigating disinformation.
But is there an existing peaceful democratic mechanism for succession in African countries?
Well, absolutely. I think Africa had made great progress since the late 1990s in advancing democratic processes, including numerous successful transitions. You know, between the late 1990s and 2020, there was a majority of African countries were democratically leaning. Now, of course, these were all works in progress. There were weaknesses There were lots of institutions that needed further strengthening, but the template is there, and democracy continues to be the most popular form of government among African citizens whenever polled. You know, they demand more from their governments. They want transparency. They want participation. They want fair elections. All of these things are ways that democracies can improve. But there, you know, we shouldn't overlook the fact that there had been great progress in Africa in building democratic institutions. And this was directly connected to the economic expansion we saw in Africa over the past two decades. You know, Africa hadn't experienced that breadth of growth, where it was averaging 4% of growth per year for two decades. And it's very directly tied to better governance, more of a commitment to the rule of law, which created confidence on the part of investors and helped create jobs for the continent.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, armed men attacked a village in the Oromo district of Ituri province yesterday, killing at least 18 people, including 11 children. Reporter Jafar Al-Katanti says the administrator of the Oromo district confirmed the attack. The government, however, has not yet identified who was responsible.
Activists from the civil society of the territory of Oromo says regarding the modus operandi, the way these people killed locals, it may be militia from Chini ya Kilima, Mai group, who are involved in that region where FRDC is also involved in fighting the ADF Islamist rebels.
The Chini ya Kalima Mai group is one of more than 100 rebel militias and gangs fighting in the eastern DRC. The ADF, or Allied Democratic Forces, is among the largest of the militias. It is an Islamist organization originally formed in Uganda almost 30 years ago and has conducted attacks in the DRC and Uganda for more than a decade. It is allied with the Islamic State militants. The DRC military, known as the FARDC, has been fighting this militias with limited success. Last year, the East African community sent in a joint force to assist. Government troops are now hunting the suspected attackers, diverting troops away from the fight against the ADF.
The military governor of Ituri province condemned this attack, which doesn't allow FRDC to continue attacking the Islamist rebel group from Uganda, ADF, and ask the question how Congolese local militia can kill Congolese people.
Also today, United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, said children in the eastern DRC are facing unheard-of violence. The UNICEF report catalogues rapes, killings, and armed groups using youngsters, including a case of infant twins found taped to a booby-trapped bomb. UNICEF said the war-torn country had the world's highest number of UN-verified violations against children in armed conflict. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Bob Bass, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.